You guys, hallelujah. It's Andy's girls. Did I emphasize that so much? It is Andy's girls, episode 5. And I'm cautiously optimistic about this episode. So here's the deal. You have listened to potentially and certainly received new episodes since the Jersey premiere. And I have heard from people who have said, hey, Dame, what's up? Bonjour. Where the fuck is the Jersey premiere episode? And I have to be very honest. I was holding off on recording this. I don't even think it was Well, certainly it was procrastinating. It was quite literally procrastinating. But it wasn't holding off on recording for the sake of holding off on recording, because certainly I've had thoughts on other matters. The most recent Summer House is going to require between 8 and 12 episodes to get through and unpack. But when I watched the Jersey premiere for the first of, I believe, 3 times, I watched it, and I don't know if it's because this is currently the only Housewives franchise that we have with new episodes right now. I don't know if it's because I just put all of my eggs in that basket regardless. I don't know if it's because I'm feeling so heated or at least inspired with thoughts by everything happening with VPR and Summer House, the other two shows that I'm super focused on. In addition, of course, to The Valley, which is just fucking killing it across the board. But the first time I watched New Jersey, I have to be super honest. The reason I was kind of holding off was because I was like, I'm going to need to be honest. let me just wait for 1 second before I come to that, the circle of truth. I didn't die for it. It's not that I disliked it. It's not that I thought the premiere was a flop, but I was a little befuddled by it. I just kind of thought, like, what's actually happening here? And usually Jersey premieres are filled with so much energy throughout. And I just personally, and I'm like happy to take the blame for it, I don't know, in my own journey called life, that I just didn't feel the kind of energy that I was hoping for. And it genuinely might be that I just had such high expectations, you know, Jersey, take me away, that when I didn't necessarily feel that energy, I was like somewhat not just befuddled, but like concerned about what there was to discuss. So then I watched the premiere a second time and I was like, hot damn, it still feels like a little bit flat to me. I know that there are things happening, but then I'm hearing more about stuff happening in the Bravoverse having to do with New Jersey, and that's kind of confusing matters. And I have to say, my worst case scenario is when things are happening or there's conversation happening about the show off TV and on social media, blogs or whatever, that seems to be more intense than what we're watching in episodes. That annoys the shit out of me. I want to focus on like what's going on the show itself. And if the show itself isn't delivering on its own, sort of regardless of what's happening online, then I have kind of a problem with not the creative direction, but certainly the execution of what it is that we're watching. So I watched it the second time. I was like, okay, I got it. Like, I remember what happened. And then today I thought, oh, low Friday, how shall we proceed with the matters? So I watched a 20-ish minute Entertainment Tonight interview with Bryce Sander, who I love, who's been on AG many times, with Teresa, that I just felt I needed to watch in full because I wanted to get a sense of what her thinking was about certainly what happened on the first episode, but really about the trailer for the season as a whole. And like, what little winks is she going to give us into the ways that she feels, as she's said numerous times, vindicated about this new season? And then I fell down the rabbit hole because I have the good or misfortune of not being on TikTok or Twitter X, to not see a lot of the like urgent breaking news matters. and reels and recaps and whatever the fuck else. So I'm kind of reliant on my Bravo, you know, text threads with friends and then what people might send me on Instagram or what I might see in my timeline. But I'm not searching stuff out otherwise. I am not creating it. I'm not that kind of content creator. There are people who do great work in that way. And I when it comes to the TikTok of it all, I don't see a lot of it because I'm not on TikTok unless someone reposted on Instagram and I see it there. Instagram is my safe space of guinea pigs and Pedro Pascal and shoes. I mean, because what else does a girl need in life? You know what I'm saying? So anyway, I heard about this kerfuffle happening online and had known that Jennifer Aiden had been scheduled for a few things, I think last week, that had been canceled. And I thought that was interesting in light of this situation, I guessed, or series of allegations that have a certain, I guess, portion of the New Jersey audience talking. These allegations made by, I guess, one content creator who over the course of several days released texts and screenshotted videos of herself communicating with allegedly Teresa, Jen Aiden, other content creators, and Teresa's lawyer, Jim Leonard, whose sidebar, am I the only one who's always felt like creepy about him? Because he seemed to take on this role of like less the attorney and more the publicist in a way that felt way too familiar for his relationship with Teresa when I thought he was her attorney, but now he's kind of become something else where he's like the family spokesperson, but also, I don't know, just the line of defense in a way that is odd to me, considering the fact that he, I thought, primarily was her attorney at some point. Anywho, these allegations that came out that allegedly Jen and Teresa have been conspiring with content creators, finding, sourcing, and then feeding to this small group of content creators to get out into the world defamatory social media to bring up on the show. So I had heard about that, and then I hadn't like gone through the reams of social, which I did today before recording. Walter Conkright over here, and talked to a friend of mine who's a content creator and was like, here's the thing, I'm not totally understanding, because I didn't understand the landscape of this, the scale of it. And I talked to a content creator and I was like, I don't totally understand why this is a huge deal. Because at that point, all I heard was members of the cast, Teresa and Jen, and again, allegedly, are like talking to content creators and feeding them information. Because I'm thinking, isn't that what Rinna did for years and years until this past season when a bunch of those people turned on her because they felt like she turned on them? I don't think that's wildly out of the realm of possibility. And I do think that there's a transactional relationship between potentially content creators of whatever kind, writers or bloggers or podcasters, whomever, and members of Bravo Talent, where it's not, I'm feeding you info, but there's certainly a reciprocal relationship potentially of like, that you can find probably, in any industry of people. It's like part of the business of just being friendly with each other. And again, it's not feeding information to be used on camera, although I wouldn't be surprised if that exists in other elements too. This is like a sort of New Jersey version of Reality Von Teese, except it's not that it's a housewife running the account. It's housewives conspiring with an account to lash out against other housewives and their families. And I was talking to my friend about it. I was like, is that really completely alien to the universe of housewives? I don't think it's that I have like a low barometer or view of Bravo Lebs. I just kind of thought that's something that's not completely unfamiliar. And my friend was like, no, I've I've never heard of anyone doing that. Have you? And I was like, well, no, I quite literally haven't heard of anyone doing that. But for whatever reason, it's just not shocking to me. And they said, no, you need to like get more information on this because this is actually very intense. And then based off of that and the fact that the premier has to do with this very allegation being posed by this content creator, tried to do a lot of just like going through their timeline and looking at these screenshots and these videos and seeing the receipts. And I just came out of it with a sense of like, oh, this is gonna fuck up this season altogether. Actually, I take that back. Maybe not altogether, but it certainly calls into question some of the arguments being made in the premiere. And I don't know why I put it sort of at the same level of members of the cast meeting before a reunion to strategize. I felt, as Dolores did, both on Watch What Happens and in her confessional, that Jen Fessler and whoever the fuck else was meeting, I guess Melissa, Joe, Marge, certainly, maybe her Joe, Frank obviously was invited, as well as his now fiance, then girlfriend, that the idea of having a meeting before a reunion is not to me a wild shock. That's something that a lot of people do. I don't know that they, you know, formalize it by putting, you know, let's take Teresa and Louis down on a Google Cal or maybe a Zoom if people have things to do, but it wasn't to me like a devastating piece of information, though I could certainly understand why. If Teresa found out people were seemingly conspiring to strategize, that's really the word that I would use here, that would come as a shock and potential piece of vindication. Now, in Teresa's interview with Bryce Sander, when she talks about vindication, it doesn't seem specific to what we found out in the premiere episode, that there was like some sort of meeting of people wanting to talk about how they were going to perform and behave at the reunion, but a later meeting. And she seemed to heavily imply that John Fuda's upset to her and to Louis was unwarranted, that someone is feeding him information that's inaccurate and is essentially using him as a vessel of revenge. And she intimates that there's like some sort of fucking meeting that happens later on in the season with, somebody, where information comes out that she feels like vindicates herself and Louis. It's so strange, but it feels like, if I remember correctly, what she says is that there's proof coming out that when it came to the Evan cheating rumor, that there's proof coming up, I guess, in this meeting or whatever, that Marge was allegedly behind that rumor coming out. And that in Teresa's argument, she's saying that she is the one that was used as the vessel of talking about that rumor on camera. And she's saying that essentially John Fuda is in her position now and got set up. Now, this is some sort of fucking meeting or whatever that comes out later in the season. We're getting into this weird territory where it feels like a lot of the energy here is about how people are using their celebrity or notoriety or just role as a Bravo Leb to seek vengeance against each other, which is not a great pattern. I think some of the issue that I have with Vanderpump Rules, as discussed on the most recent Taking It Personally, it could be an issue or it could just be a way to define the season, is that the season itself is like these people who are now celebrities, really well known, grappling with the trauma of having gone through Scandoval and figuring out ways to use their role and time on the show to either improve their reputation or seek revenge in some way. And it's less about this original group of friends and more about people with individual like press vendettas or interest in expanding their fame or celebrity. And it's not really about core relationships, except when they're being used in a way that can help them with like strategy as far as being a Bravo Leb. And so when it comes to all of this, I'm like, ooh, we're getting into a weird territory here where I guess it's like 100% breaking the fourth wall if we're talking about who's starting rumors
to humiliate one person or another on camera. It becomes so much about how you're utilizing your time on Housewives that that becomes the bubble instead of the bubble of like, here we are living in these oddly XXL mega mansions in Franklin Lakes. Let's talk about your patio. Like, instead of having those conversations and fighting at lunch and stuff, which I like regardless, let's be honest, it becomes about leveraging their celebrity and in a way that is like so much worse than what used to happen on New York, for example, where Page Six was an honorary friend of. Like, that stuff felt great. Season three of New York, where Page Six and who's leaking who and who's doing what. I mean, we see that on Beverly Hills with Radar Online. What's happening now with social is not just, it's not really about like what the gossip blogs are saying. It's like, what am I doing as a Bravoleb with my relationship, in my relationships with content creators or people who have blogs, to fuck with a coworker so that I can make that into a point of plot? It's like, if you look at the kind of scavenger hunt of where this stuff is starting, it's so inside the machine of Housewives that it feels completely inauthentic and just almost conventional in a way. And I don't know if it was that kind of energy that had me a little distorted when it came to watching the premiere, but I do have to say that after watching that 20-minute interview, Embrace did, of course, a great job with Teresa. And after going through all those receipts, I watched the premiere a third time and I enjoyed it. I don't know if it took me three times, because it just took me three times because I'm a little out of shape after not seeing a Housewives, goddamn new Housewives episode in like 2 or 17 weeks. That could be it. It could just be that I put too much pressure on it. It could just be now that I have a curiosity, I guess, about some of the stuff that's happening off camera. Though, again, I don't want that to become the story. The story should be on the episodes that we're watching, the plot that we're seeing on TV. But it is kind of fascinating, because this whole goddamn thing with Teresa and Jen and this content creator who, P.S., I must note that this content creator who's like coming out with all these receipts, their Twitter handle is Melissa's Old Nose. And I mean, it's so Bravoholic specific in a way that I find charming, I have to say. I really do. But noting that they're coming out with all of this information, it is a little confusing, maybe destabilizing, when I'm watching Teresa be like, hey, did you hear about that double-sided dildo that was in the press, Jen? Oh, Jen heard? Oh my God, isn't that crazy? Well, let's talk about that for a second. Let me call my, you know, weird red-faced husband over in quote-unquote Florida and tell him about the dildo. He's so tan. What is happening with Louis' tan? It makes me concerned for him. Let me just kind of talk to him about whatever the fuck is going on and then bring that up in a moment that I'm hoping serves to humiliate Louis, to know episode one from the person who was responsible for spreading information related to a preference in sex toys allegedly discussed by an ex who's been divorced or separated from this man for over a decade. Like, that's such an odd thing to focus on. And also, I don't know if this is just me, after many, many, having experienced many, many, many seasons and franchises of Housewives, but the idea that John Fuda was allegedly maybe a purveyor of pasta, shall we say, in a previous life, was not a big shock. Like, it's not to say that I believe it, but I'm just saying that's not a big surprise to me. Like, oh my God, an aha moment, according to his ex, who has a reason to want to humiliate him. She's saying he may have been a drug dealer. Okay. Like, I know it's a huge thing for a person's reputation. He has a thriving, I believe it's a tile business. He has like a very, very successful business. I could understand him not wanting to feel like people are attempting to humiliate him on social media and on national TV. I totally get that. But also, when I'm thinking about like things that could fuck up a reputation, I mean, Teresa's the one saying this. There's been so much worse that feels so much more provable about Louis, that this is not apples to apples. It's not can of, and I'm sorry that I'm even saying can of tomato sauce to can of marinara. It's just not the same thing. Now that the temperature is rising, and I don't just mean the heat coming between Lindsay versus Carl, it can be really difficult to get my hair under control. I have like this wavy, curly, frizzy, natural texture that I genuinely love, but it can be really difficult to find a product that works for my hair without feeling heavy and genuinely counteracts the frizziness that I get naturally if I don't blow out my hair. That's why I love Way. Whether your strands are fine, medium, or like mine, thick, Way has shampoo and conditioner that's your type. I love the detox shampoo because it does exactly that. It detoxes your hair. And because I am a spiritual blonde and do have some color processing, the shampoo helps clean away all the schmutz that accumulates, leaving my hair feeling lighter and better than it did before. God bless that apple cider vinegar. And yes, for that frizz, I rely on the anti-frizz cream. I put it in after I shower, do a little scrunch of my hair, and I'm good to go. Way keeps me looking like me, just a little bit elevated. Jesse Solomon, have you heard my call? If you want volume, Way's fine hair and conditioner will give you a lift without weighing you down. Not sure what your type is? Take Way's hair quiz to find out. Wash your way to healthier hair with shampoos and conditioners made just for you. Go to theouai.com and use code Andy for 15% off your entire purchase. That's theouai.com, code Andy. The week before Aunt Flo comes to town is always a tough one. I just feel off. I don't feel like myself. My cravings go absolutely wild. And in New York City, when you can order anything at any time, it certainly doesn't help. Thankfully, now it's easier to manage PMS with Estro Control. And for those who are going through menopause or premenopause, when it can be equally a struggle to find comfort in your body, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony and Estro Control, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. And P.S., BT Dubs, Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it. But it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts, low moods, poor sleep, and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas. Hormone Harmony can help with all of those things. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, HAPPYMAMMOTH.com, and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. I know I'm one of many people who struggles with the all or nothing fads. Juice cleanses, soup diets, keto, hours and hours of cardio. If this cycle sounds familiar to you, and it definitely does to me, there's a better, more sustainable way to lose weight. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And let's talk about the big O, obesity. 4 in 10 Americans struggle with it, so there should be no shame in the weight game. It's okay to talk about weight loss and talking about it in a way that feels healthy. With Row, you can sign up online from the comfort of your own home. That's right, the people's couch. This means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Before being prescribed medication, patients must complete an online medical visit, lab test, and qualify for medication based on their BMI, lab results, medical history, and the discretion of a Ro-affiliated healthcare provider.
Like talking and trying to mock a person, what a person is using in their bedroom is just so tired to me and uninteresting. And I'm like watching these two women essentially yuck it up literally and figuratively about this thing that his ex, who was like in prison at that point or in a halfway house, is allegedly telling them, that they're also allegedly then telling to people who are content creators to get that information online so they have a reason to pull it in front of filming, is so stupid to me. And I just can't get over how dumb it is. And it just makes Teresa and Jen look so young in a way that I sort of can't get over, in a way that maybe I find kind of like funny, because it's just so sad to me. It's just so sad. And I don't know what that says about me, that initially I was like, oh, isn't that something a lot of people do? Not in terms of that actual gossip, but just in terms of some of these relationships that exist in and outside of the Bravo universe. But just those two examples, like, that's the best you could do? It's such a weird, I guess, to them, win. It's just kind of out of nowhere dumb. And one could argue that, you know, Teresa seems to have a big vested interest in this alliance being unearthed of people strategizing how to make Louis look bad. And this is her way of seeking revenge, of trying to make John look as bad as possible. But it's like, what about all this stuff that's come out about Louis? What about all this stuff that Louis has said on camera about himself? What about bringing, I can't go back to the last reunion episode of last season, because it was one of the most upsetting, disturbing episodes of any reunion arc I've ever seen on Housewives. It was so dark and so fucking bleak. The idea that potentially a house husband of a housewife called an off-camera adult child we've never seen and rarely heard discussed at their place of work to threaten them because he has an issue with this kid's mom is so dark and disturbing to me, that to talk about, like, maybe this is a way to disappear that, because we're going to talk about what John Fuda does, the way he likes to get fucked, is like, it's just not the same thing. Like, showing up with armed security as a way to intimidate your cast members when you know that's obviously not warranted at a highly protected reunion where there is no reason to feel that you are under physical threat in the way that are saying that you might be. It's just so unnerving to think about Louis when it comes to specifics, that when we talk about, like, what's the hot goss on John Fuda, it just feels so desperate. It's a better strategy to focus on, do these people want to destroy my relationship? Do they want to ruin my reputation by talking about or conspiring with what they're going to discuss on the reunion? But there's a difference between people saying, here's what I want to discuss and here's how I need your help, and we're just going to, like, make shit up, versus we know this man has done dangerous, potentially to us, I'm going to characterize it as dangerous things, or things that have crossed crazy, crazy, crazy lines. Are we really going to bring that up on camera? Like, how much of what potentially Teresa and Louis' enemies, how much of what they were talking about
bringing up at the reunion were complete, absolute lies, and how much of it was just about revealing dark truths. I'm erring on the side of the latter, and what Therese is doing to me is a little bit of the former, and it's just not on the same level. And it also, again, does feel dumb. But maybe it just took me 7 to 19 times to watch the episode to be like, you know what? It's dumb. It's stupid. But now that I know it's completely hypocritical in a new, interesting way, maybe I'm having a little fun because Teresa's now lost the argument. If you could say that she had it before about people conspiring to make her look bad, which I'm taking her at her word on that, and I understand how she came to that conclusion. But if we're going to go with that, you lose the argument immediately when a content creator comes forward with screen. I mean, we're not going to Heather Gay it, but like with screenshots, with videos, with like example after example, fucking everything, just example after example of the fact that she, I think there were voice notes too, of Teresa and Jen Aden both conspiring to strategize how to defame this man. And surely not just him, but it does paint a weird sort of, not bleak, but just a little bit of a weird picture over what we're going to get to, I guess, later on in the season. If the stuff about maybe Evan is, you know, who started those rumors, if that really, in fact, is going to be a part of the season. And I really genuinely don't know. But based on what we're seeing the first episode and based on what the strategy that Teresa has about feeling vindication of people doing things to spite her, to try to seek revenge against her and make her spouse look bad. I think she used a phrase that I thought was kind of interesting, but people were going after essentially the weakest link to go after her. And that was how she was describing Louis, just to say, I guess he was the easiest way for people to fuck with her, to go through him. But if we're saying that like these examples are ways that people are trying to mess with me, if there are all of these screenshots now and pieces of evidence that exist of her doing the exact same thing, then what the fuck are we talking about? Then at best, they kind of sort of even each other out, even though, as I said, it's not necessarily an even comparison. But also, if you're in the other camp and you haven't done stuff like this and she's accusing you of doing stuff that you just genuinely haven't done, then where is the weight shifting here? It's just truly, I haven't even gotten into deep diving the episode itself, but I kind of totally have just attempting to encapsulate in the sloppiest possible way. Welcome to my Friday night. The ways that I'm like kind of confused already at the setup for the season, but also obviously intrigued. This can also 1000% get very tired very fast. Andy's already discussed the fact that like the current divide in the cast, the entirely separate universes are completely unsustainable. And I thought we got an example of that during the first episode. I mean, we have Teresa's universe, we have Melissa's universe, and now apparently we have Marge's universe, which is attached to Melissa's universe. I don't know why I was so surprised by this, but when Marge said she like never wanted to mention or speak to Teresa again, I genuinely was a little shocked. I don't know why. I just kind of thought people have made peace, and by people, I mean the cast, but really more so production, have made peace with the fact that, you know, Joe, Melissa, Teresa, and Louis do not want to acknowledge or speak to each other either again. I kind of thought that was it. I don't know why I lost Marge in the mix, but I wasn't expecting her to say, I never want to speak of and deal with this woman, meaning Teresa, ever again. I found that genuinely surprising. And so I don't know how that is going to affect the energies and all of this. Obviously, Teresa carries with her a lot of anger about what she feels like is Marge behind the scenes trying to do things to make Louis look bad. Of course, Marge's perspective is, you know, you came for my fucking kid, you piece of shit. That's something that she can't look away from or move forward from, which I completely understand. I don't know why I was just so surprised by that. But there were elements of the episode that I thought were interesting. First off, when did Rachel Fuda become good at this? Is it just me? The fact that they essentially started the premiere with her, and I thought that was an absolute right choice. There's something about her ease now with filming. She just feels really comfortable doing this in a way that I'm so thankful for. Also, with the like Rachel versus Danielle stuff from last season, the way that that was so easily patched up of, you know, we're just like meeting each other and introducing ourselves to each other again and having a fresh start, like having a genuine new beginning in New Jersey feels wildly unrealistic at this point. So it was incredibly pleasant to watch. And it's also just kind of interesting because I remember when Rachel and Danielle first started on the show, like the very first episodes with them, I was really attached to Danielle. Like I thought Danielle was going to be the breakout star. Rachel to me was sort of like softer, more in the background, not as specific a character as Danielle appeared. And I think over the course of the season, and certainly we're seeing examples of that in their growth in the premiere, like Rachel to me just keeps rising and rising. She just feels like such a solid, that she has such a solid role in this universe, that she's really created her own path here and is doing good work. And with Danielle, I felt like she kind of faded at points. She was tapping out during the last season, walking away instead of really involving herself. It was surprising to me. It felt like she had, there was some internal stuff going on, surely, about trying to navigate how to film all of this. But I just thought she was such an external character that she would be the kind of person, sort of Marge-esque, who would be very, very comfortable being, you know, a loud, colorful personality, that I didn't see that as much. It felt like she was kind of closing in on herself a little bit last season. So we'll see what happens this season. Obviously, there's some fucking big goddamn fight or altercation or whatever word you want to use between Danielle and Jen Aiden. I don't know if that's going to be the very last episode that we saw glimpses of in the, you know, first moments of the premiere, or that's something that happens on, in addition to that. I don't know when in the timing of the season itself they have their altercation, if it's quite literally the heart of the finale or done at another time. But, you know, certainly she's going to have a little bit of a switching of the guard over the course of the season, detaching and disassociating herself from Teresa and Jen, getting closer to the other side as Jackie does the reverse. And Jackie at this party, I mean, there were rumors that something was going to come up that was related to her book that drove a wedge between her and Marge and maybe Melissa. Certainly the wedge with Melissa became clear. I don't know if that was specific, though, to the book or something else, but I just can't make heads or tails of her. Although if Teresa is true in saying there's a moment of vindication that has to do with who was possibly spreading rumors or talking about rumors relating to Evan, if that really truly is a moment of vindication, that would certainly explain Jackie's switching of sides. And I guess we'll see more on that if we see more on that. But it's just kind of perplexing to me otherwise, because based on what we saw of her relationships and fights with Teresa previously and Jen, it just doesn't make any sense. I think a lot of people are scratching their heads about Jackie, which doesn't to me have anything to do with like being a tree hugger or a Gorgita crunch. I think it's just like, wait, what's happening with Jackie? It just, is this something that's happening because we're not, you know, loving being a friend of, and we'd like to have that promotion back to holding that can of marinara, which is the thing in my head, or a bag of trash. Those are like the two things I always imagine that the Housewives of New Jersey are holding just in my head. Just makes me gaggle at the end of the day. Why aren't they holding anything? It doesn't, they should hold something. Like they could hold a flower. I don't know, whatever it is, like some sort of lovely Italian delight. It just, it does not make sense that they're not holding anything and everyone else on every other franchise seemingly is. I mean, people are holding goddamn Texas stars on Real Housewives of Do we not have a New Jersey star? Isn't there a newspaper called the New Jersey Star? Like, could we not hold a newspaper or, I don't know, something Sopranos-esque? Is that too close here? Is there not something we can have that can symbolize a shared Italian culture between all of us. My last name is Galli. Could they not hold my name or somebody else's or a tile maybe? My grandpa was also a tile maker, much like I believe John Fuda is. So could they not hold a tile from one of the houses or a small McMansion? Could they not hold Melissa's porch? Could we not have that? A miniature perhaps? Is that so difficult to create? I guess, because Joe had to do it twice, but like, is that not something that they could have? Okay, continuing on. So the Jackie to me is a little bit of a question mark. But I love the fact that the episode started and ended with Rachel, because Rachel is in full control of Rachel, and that to me is really good TV. I have to say, speaking of all things Fuda, this whole thing about John Fuda not wanting to meet with Louis in advance of the event, I have to say I did understand what Louis was saying of like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to have a conversation that could very well escalate really quickly at, you know, Jen Fessler's birthday party. I don't want to have a fight in a parking lot. Let's sit down like quote unquote men and talk this out. And maybe it might escalate. Voices might get raised, but just like get this out. I think that's what Polly was attempting to say in his later conversation with John, which didn't go great. I also understand what John is saying, which is like, you're coming for my fucking family. You're maybe contacting my ex. I'm not going to give you the honor or opportunity of having my time in that way. Like, you don't deserve it. I'll give you 2 minutes outside. So I understood what Louis was saying and just like wanting to have a separate conversation. I actually thought, obviously, because Jen Fessler was joking about the fact that there was bloodshed at her, you know, 55th surprise birthday soiree, I understood why Louis felt like that might be more of a sign of respect for Jennifer. And I understood why John Fuda was like, I don't give a shit about any kind of respect when it comes to us. Also, I mean, shout out to Florida, I guess, for enticing Louis with a business opportunity down there, which surprisingly, shockingly conflicted with this surprise birthday event. You know, there were moments, the thing about Jersey that is so special and meaningful to me as a Bravo-holic and a viewer is the family relationships and watching the kids grow up. And to see the, you know, joy and kind of like sadness that Melissa and Teresa are both experiencing. It's so interesting that they're both going through this moment at the exact same time. And there's no ability to connect in that way because they don't want to be in each other's universe ever again. But thanks to the shared universe of being on this TV show, to watch them kind of go through this path of sending off their daughters to colleges, you know, not inside of the Garden State. I mean, you're going to two great schools, Delaware and Michigan, that are essentially a flight away, and watching them kind of deal with a little bit of separation anxiety in that. And watching that on the heels of Avery Singer just being back to bartend on Watch What Happens was such interesting timing to me, because Andy asked her about her experiences, you know, obviously as Ramona's daughter, and going through the experience of being the child of a housewife. Like, did she connect with other kids of housewives, you know, when she was right in the thick of her mom filming? And she said essentially like, no, I didn't have that opportunity. I wish I did. But I was appreciative of the fact that when, you know, mid COVID, Andy had I think it was during COVID, the first time it happened, at least, that Andy had a themed Kids of Housewives episode of Watch What Happens Live. And it was a chance for a bunch of these kids, and I still call them kids because I always will, of these young adults to kind of share a little bit of like war stories of what they experienced. And what Avery said on the episode of Watch What Happens that I thought was really interesting was like, what was interesting to her and affirming was to hear that other kids also didn't watch the show, that she thought she was the only one who like only wanted to watch maybe an episode a season or something. And it turns out a lot of those other kids did the same thing. And Avery's explanation of that was because I want to see my mom as my mom. Like, I want to continue to have a very specific lens of how I view her in addition to the day-to-day you know, elements and goings on of our relationship. And I thought that was such an interesting point, and one that it's so fascinating that seemingly all of the kids, or the majority of the kids, just instinctively shared of like, I'm not going to watch this show because it's going to maybe not tarnish, but certainly influence maybe my relationship with my mom, or projection of how I view my mom, or just wanting to have some distance from this completely, hopefully separate universe, you know, including when we're not filming. And it's just fascinating when you think of like the fact that Avery didn't have the opportunity, because social media wasn't the way it is now, to really bond with people going through it during her generation of housewives. Now I think that's different in many ways, or at least I hope it is, where, you know, children of housewives currently hopefully can DM each other, stay in touch, where there's the opportunity to just like talk about, you know, maybe I'm getting, oh God, help us, but like maybe I'm getting weird messages from fans of the show. Look at what Garcelle's kids have had to experience. I hope that in the number of people who reached out to support them were hopefully other children of housewives, grown or not, to just kind of say, you know, if you want to talk about this, I'm here to chat, and just kind of go through it together. And I felt for Avery and not kind of having that. And it was just so interesting in watching 1700 times the New Jersey premiere, because we're watching Gabriella and Antonia pack off and go to college. And they're not just kids of housewives who happen to be on the same franchise. They're also cousins. And I just kind of wonder for them, not only are they watching the show, I kind of feel like instinctively they're probably not, but like, are they able to chat with each other? I know that things are so, so tough and intense. And unfortunately, the kids have gotten mixed up in a lot of this, including in like what their parents might or might not discuss about Zia, Melissa, or Zia Teresa, or Zio Joe,
or Louie, who's now there.
It's just kind of, it was like a little bit of a sad moment, because I'm just thinking of the bond that could have existed in an alternate universe between Teresa and Melissa as cast members, even not like family members or relatives. But I'm also just thinking about what the kids have had to experience being on the same show and also being family members, and also that level of a cast member fucking with their nemesis, who also happens to be their sister-in-law. Regardless of whatever camp you might find your place in, including, you know, neither of the two. But it just kind of was like, oh, that's like a, but you know, it's a kind of like not a missed opportunity, that's not the right phrase, but just a moment where I just kind of reflected and thought like, wouldn't this be great if there was the ability for these two cousins to maybe connect or continue to connect. And I say that noting that they might be able to. There might have been maybe a little bit of a pause between the cousins, and maybe they've picked things up, and it's like, you know, just a decision of, we're just not going to talk about our parents, let's just talk about us. That's at least my hope, because they're going through some very, very similar experiences, especially in terms of having to deal potentially with a toxic fandom, that it would be nice, I guess, selfishly for me to just kind of feel like they had each other. And I hope that they do. Certainly a hope. After watching Lala and Sandoval's behavior on the Vanderpump Rules reunion, I developed such an intense thirst. I guess it's contagious when you're talking about Vanderpump Rules. So thank goodness for Fiji Water. Fiji Water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the United States. It has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH, and unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji Water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. In fact, Fiji Water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two, giving it signature soft, smooth taste. As someone who has spoken on the pod time and time again about the importance of having electrolytes, especially this summer, Fiji fits into my lifestyle so well. Before going on a little bit of a stroll, just a short one in these warmer summer temps, I grab my Fiji water and I am out the door. Unlike some other premium bottled waters in the market, there's no ingredient statement on Fiji Water because there's nothing added to the water itself. Fiji Water is Earth's finest water. And as someone who's currently deep in the throes of watching Bravo's Finest Television, also known as Summer House, I know that having Fiji Water by my side is keeping me hydrated and refreshed. So Lala, take that. There is something wonderful about the change of seasons here in New York. No, not just upping my electrolytes when I go for a relatively short walk. It's the smell of summer grilling, especially for whatever reason, I don't know why, in the West Village. It's sort of my seasonal clock. When I start to smell people, that sounds crazy. When I start to smell summer grilling outside, I know summer is upon us. And listen, I can't dig into my veggie dog or veggie burger without some bread or buns. Just because it's summer doesn't mean you have to cut out all the carb-heavy foods you love. Hero Bread reinvented the bread and buns that make summer great. Fluffy, delicious flavor and texture with no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. For me, getting enough fiber and cutting down on sugar are key elements to feeling better throughout the day. Hero Bread also has mouth-watering limited edition bakes, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero Croissant. As Luann would say, c'est bon, c'est bon. Keep the carbs out of summer without compromising flavor with Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co and use code Andy at checkout. That's Andy at hero.co. Sheena Marie, or as I will refer to her forever and ever, amen, Sheena Shea, has been right about a couple things in life. Number one, good as gold is a bop. Number two, apples are a delicious fruit. And also, family life is unpredictable. And a little peace of mind goes a long way. Now, as a single woman living here in New York City, Pedro Pascal, it's your time. Oftentimes, I am checking in with my friends because safety is important and so is peace of mind. In fact, when I had a medical crisis a couple years ago, my friends didn't know where I was while I was in the hospital. The reason they knew something was wrong, true story, was because I didn't show up to a private shopping appointment downtown. That's where Life 360 comes in. Life 360 is a family connection and safety app that lets you keep track of the people and things that are most important to you. The people you need to know are okay. A focus that Sheena Shea keeps in mind. While Life 360 can be used for so many reasons, the option of ensuring that your kids are protected while giving them independence, checking on your friends, or for me, as someone who has some chronic health issues, to ensure that people know where I am. That's why I love Life 360. Another thing I love about it is that with all of these lovely European schleps, in addition to sharing my flight information with my mom, she can see exactly when I've landed because of the app. Parents have enough to worry about. Breathe easier with Life 360. Visit life360.com or download the app today and use code Andy's Girls to get 1 month of the gold package for free, plus 15% off all tiles. That's life360.com, code Andy's Girls. It's good as gold.
So that was a positive moment between the two warring families. Although there was also that moment of hearing that, you know, Joe's been through the unpacking of college stuff because he helped Gia move in, and just these tiny little pangs of like just small little references to the life that used to be a shared one between Teresa and Joe and Melissa. And to just know that that really genuinely doesn't exist any longer. I mean, I certainly agree with Dolores, who's in the mix with all of this, who says, you know, essentially you said on Watch What Happens, like, they're just so much lighter, that their world for Teresa, for Melissa, for Joe is just so much lighter.
living very, very separate lives where they truly choose not to interact. And to know that that works for both camps in this, it's, you know, they're siblings, but not all siblings are meant to communicate and stay in each other's lives. And who knows if this will be a permanent something? Who knows if there will be an additional chapter in life where maybe they find their way back to each other? And hopefully, if that happens, which feels like many years off, if it even does, hopefully that will repair some of the wounds that certainly still exist, even though neither, you know, Teresa nor Melissa really wants to discuss the other. Although that moment when Joe felt Teresa's presence and just the look of like, and feeling of physical discomfort and maybe some nervousness of his strange sibling being there at that moment was uncomfortable. But of course it's going to be. It's his sister. They're not talking. They don't want to have each other in their life. Of course it's going to be an uncomfortable moment. So we'll see what happens there as the season goes on. I do have to say that my two favorite moments that I've watched over and over and over again, Jen Fessler playing the guitar, just the reveal of that. There's something about her strumming those guitar strings that I couldn't get over. And also, I think this is the number one moment for a lot of people, myself absolutely included. But Teresa and Jen Aiden swearing about Rachel Fuda while unsuccessfully stuffing bars of candy into those like gilded, you know, party gift bags is so funny to me, especially because there's like a human candy cane in the middle of the goddamn, you know, human standing table. It's so funny. I could watch that over, like them being like, she's such a bitch, as they're like stuffing like M&Ms, whatever the fuck else, into those bags, stuff falling on the floor, not giving a single shit about those now and laters that have just been dropped to their deaths on the floor of that party, of that tavern in Somewheresville, New Jersey. It was so funny to me. I could watch that over and over and over again. Apologies to Jen Fessler, maybe, or, you know, thank you so much because that was a great moment. But that was like the number one moment to me from the party. That genuinely was so funny. I've watched it several times. I feel like I've covered a lot about the premiere, not everything, and certainly we'll have guests on to unpack the upcoming episodes. There was one other moment that I haven't discussed that I thought was really fascinating. And I guess it's a little bit of a two-parter. Marge talking about losing Jan and grieving now a death that happened many months prior. And, you know, to have this partner who she was obviously married to, they get divorced. She says, you know, we weren't a great couple, or we weren't a great like married couple. We weren't a great man and wife, but we were a great family. And to talk about her grieving this man and his role in her life and like his role as her support system, because obviously while she's been married to Joe for many years, the Jan of it all was he had such an important, like, sacred role in her life, both as a co-parent for their kids, you know, their child together and Marge's stepkids, but also just, I think, for Marge, just continuing, I think, some of those elements of being a spouse, because Jan knew her. I guess so did Joe, but like Jan just knew her from a private life. So to have that prior life, rather, so to have that connection to this other side of Marge and have that kind of private connection and the language, I'm sure that both of them had like such shorthand with each other, and to see her really struggling and saying, you know, lately I'm not myself, which I just thought was such a powerful way to encapsulate it, of I'm not myself, because part of Marge being herself was having Jan. And to think of how that changes a person and like, how am I in this world? Not only the pressure and anxiety and stress of having to deal with all of these responsibilities she used to share with Jan, but not being able to share herself with Jan, like other aspects of who she is that maybe she doesn't have in her marriage with Joe. And that's okay. She had this other person that she could share her life with. Obviously not romantically, but he was genuinely a partner to her. And to see her go through that was, I think, a really, you know, it's an important, interesting, certainly a sad moment. Obviously, it's one that we're going to get into more as this season progresses, because there are questions, I guess, about Marge's relationship with Joe, which I genuinely was surprised by, that to hear that there's some, I guess, ongoing or maybe substantial tension. I don't know why I would be so surprised after having such a big loss in her life. Obviously, that would influence all aspects of her life, but I'm curious to hear more about that. And then this is maybe such a nothing burger, like, dumb moment. But I mean, I don't want to categorize it as a dumb moment, even though I literally just did. But there was a moment that to me was like a little Sheena Ariana coded, which is when Jen Fessler says that, you know, essentially, Teresa has always been so nice to me. I'd like to talk to her about you, Marge. And Marge is like immediately like, no, absolutely fucking not. Do not ever reference me with her. I don't want that to ever happen. And Jen Fessler essentially reminds Marge that she told her at one point she would stop talking to Teresa in defense of her friendship with Marge. That, like, Jen Fessler is like, I'll never talk to her again in allyship with you, in friendship with you as well. And for Jen Fessler to say, and I meant it, I thought was really interesting, because you're doing that in the same breath of talking about the fact that Teresa's always been nice to you. I know that she meant, you know, I want to talk to Teresa about you as a way to possibly support Marge in some way. Ooh, the way my voice went up. I'm trying to give her the benefit of the doubt in that. It just, to me, felt, it really did feel a little Sheena Ariana coded. And I guess in this case, Teresa is Tom, which is really genuinely unfair to Teresa, I have to say, but it is still making me laugh. That for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because Vanderpump Rules exists in like 90% of my brain, the other 10%. I guess, existing with that like rotted worm that RFK has been dealing with. But in that 90, that's doing great. I think so much about VPR, and Sheena's been on my mind like 24/7, just watching some clips from her podcast talking about the role of production and producers in breaking the fourth wall the night of the finale. I really genuinely have been thinking about it, in addition to Summer House Around the Clock. But it was also just interesting to me in that moment. Maybe I'm like completely off about this, and that's obviously fine. But to see Jen Fessler say like, and I meant it when I said that, when I said I would never talk to you again. But also, she's been so nice to me, and maybe I have a conversation with her about you, if that works, if that's okay. I wonder how that is going to develop. I mean, I think we saw a glimpse of it in the trailer, maybe at Dolores's baseball charity game. I think maybe Fessler and Marge are having an awkward moment where Fessler's talking about Teresa treating her well. I'm curious to see how Jen Fessler's possible growing relationship or friendship with Teresa might affect her friendship with Marge. How could it not, at the end of the day, if they are really genuinely enemies in the ways it appears they are? But look at that. Having nothing to say about New Jersey, it turns out, had a little bit of a chat. So thanks to all of you for your patience with this episode. And also, I'm so curious for your thoughts about whatever's going on in real time with the content creator, Misha Goss, about how you felt about the premiere, how you're feeling. Are you a tree hugger? Are you a Gorgita crunch? Are you somewhere in the middle or completely outside of it, watching and just kind of observing what's going on? Send me your satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns about all things Real Housewives of New Jersey, and also Vanderpump Rules, and also The Valley, and also Summer House, because I do want to record yet another Satchel Spectacular, my favorite thing to record on the AG Patreon, where I unpack your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Cloran Ben-Simone. So slide into my DMs on Instagram, no voice notes, please, and take up space. I love, love, love a lengthy, interesting, thorough deep dive. Include your first name and town. Let me know if you'd like it to be anonymous instead. And it may be featured on an upcoming Patreon episode, which you can listen to at the AG Patreon, number one way to support the pod, at patreon.com/andysgirls. Follow me on Instagram and allegedly Threads at Dame Galley. And I'm so curious for your thoughts on this episode. Again, I'm sorry for the delay, but I really didn't want to record an episode where I was just like, yeah, I don't really have any thoughts, or to attempt to have thoughts that felt inorganic. That is not something that I wanted to do. So I'm thankful and appreciative that you guys gave me a couple days to figure it all out. And hopefully, you know, 3% of this made sense. That feels like a positive way to end the episode. So here's to the 3%. So guys, thanks again, and I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.